Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of July, recording at 9:20 p.m., and that's British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let me start with a quick review of the week. For stock markets, well, quite a week it was, because we saw rallies pretty much across the boards, and they were strong rallies, taking a number of stock markets, still a minority of them, but a number of, a minority of stock markets up to new 2009 highs. And a good many others are, well, for instance, we're publishing some tables today, and I think 67 of the 107 indices measured are within 5% of their highs, and of course a good many of them are considerably closer to that or already in new 2009 high territory. Elsewhere, long-dated government bonds have continued to give up their earlier gains. They've been doing that all week. The U.S. dollar has been soft this week, although it's albeit within its range. That's the quietest sector currencies right now. But the U.S. dollar has basically gone from the upper side of its range towards the middle to lower region of its trading range of the last 2-3 months against most currencies. And precious metals have all bounced, with gold one of the firmer. And industrial metals, industrial commodities generally are stronger. The soft commodities have been more mixed. I mean, sugar has been strong. I think orange juice has been strong. These are crop factors at play here, but the overall tone of the grain and bean complex has been fairly soft, although a rebound here today by some of those. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, I think it's fascinating. You might remember that back on June 3rd, we pointed out the downside key day reversals and also upside key day reversals, and basically those capped precious metals and put them into retreat. It capped a number of stock market rallies and put them into, well, or rallies towards the higher side of trading ranges and put them into retreat. It capped the declines in the U.S. dollar and enabled it to rally from the lower side of its range. And it also capped the declines in long-dated government bond prices and enabled them to rally. Well, this last Monday, the 13th of July, we had a number of key day reversals and dynamic signals reversing the June 3rd signal. In other words, on the 13th of July, this last Monday, stock markets started to move upwards, and precious metals and industrial commodities, for the most part, started to move upwards. Long-dated government bonds went into retreat, and the dollar went into retreat. Yeah, you could almost say that all these markets are keying off the S&P these days, but now I'll stay with that, and that people who maybe wouldn't have paid it much attention among Forex traders or precious metals traders are suddenly becoming much, much more interested. Now, these links tend to be, they become almost automatic, knee-jerk responses in a Pavlovian sense. While they persist, and they persist for a while, and then people either get bored with it or more likely something else changes and they stop working, and whatever fundamental trend might be out there becomes ascended. So that's the type of environment we've had, though, where everything seems to be keying off the S&P, with industrial commodities moving in the same direction, the dollar and the long-dated government bond prices moving in the opposite direction of the S&P. Okay, so what can we say about these stock markets? Well, Owen and I have been pointing out for some time that the rallies had lost upside momentum and that we had gone into a ranging reaction phase that might well spill over into a correction in our terminology. And I mentioned this for review and particularly for new subscribers who are joining us all the time, fortunately. I mentioned that in a reaction, that's a small pullback, probably under 10%, and lasting several weeks, few months at most. A correction would be bigger, I would think, in terms of over 10%, and it would probably last for several months. Well, as it turned out, I think the S&P fell about 9% from its high before starting to rebound on Monday. And it only took it 5 days to get back up to a very close to a point where it's very close to that high up here at 940. It took it 4 days to do that, actually, because it's sort of unchanged in here today. So impressive stuff. That shows that weight of cash is still a very important factor. In other words, a lot of investors have been looking and waiting and wanting a pullback to occur and have cash to invest. That is often a characteristic of the earlier stages of bull markets, and is also one of the reasons why we had such a huge rally off the lows that we saw in March. And those rallies were particularly strong for the markets that were weak up to that point, whereas some other stock markets had been moving steadily upward since last October's selling climax. It also indicated that there were a number of short positions in the markets. And I suppose that's not all that surprising, given some of the high-profile bears that are quoted regularly in the press. It's quite interesting in the sense that my perception, I don't read all the press, but I see headlines as we all do, and my impression is that the high profile bears get a good deal more coverage than the high profile bulls. Maybe it's it sells more, call me cynical, but maybe it sells more newspapers if people are talking about economic collapse and possible depression, deflation, than if people say, well, things are slowly getting better, which is my view. Things are slowly getting better, and stock markets are doing a whole lot better. And one of the reasons why stock markets are doing a whole lot better is first, all those building blocks that I talked about in terms of bullish factors, building blocks for a bull market. You want to have prices, you want to have stock markets way down. Well, they certainly were back in October and November, and a number of them moved even lower into early March. So you want markets down, and you want record low interest rates as we had in short terms of short-term interest rates, and in some instances, lowest levels in long-dated interest rates for a very, very long time in terms of corporate bonds. You want to have a background of a panic, selling panic, which we certainly had. You want to have central banks pulling all the monetary levers in terms of expansion, which we have certainly have, and really setting records in doing so, really from Washington to Beijing. And you want to have low inflation, and we certainly had that. So those are all the building blocks. The missing ingredient, of course, was confidence. But there's nothing that improves confidence more than a rising market. Or if it doesn't improve confidence, it drags people in, particularly in the investment management community, because they can't afford to sit on the sidelines. Why can't they afford to sit on the sidelines? Because their customers will walk away, or they'll get sacked by their firms for non-performance. I think it was Jeremy Grantham who said back in the dark days of the fourth quarter of 2008, he said, "You look like a complete idiot," or words to that effect, if you didn't have a reasonable investment position near the bottom of the stock market cycle. So, certainly weight of cash has been a big factor in helping to push markets up. And stock markets are often described as a discounting mechanism. Well, that's sometimes true. They're mighty volatile, that's for sure. So they tend to overshoot. Remember, we were discounting a depression, and there were certainly plenty of investors who were talking about a depression. And what were corporations doing? Well, they went into survival mode, which means they cut back on overheads as much as possible, not least in terms of personnel. So when the depression doesn't materialize and people just say, well, this is stopped at the awful recession level for OECD countries. Some countries, you have to remember, never went into recession. China never went into recession. India never went into recession. Okay, if we play with semantics, we can say they had growth recessions. But they never went to negative on GDP. I don't think Indonesia did either. And it's probably there are a few more. And others have clearly pulled out of recession had suffered. So you have that readjustment, and people say that equities are worth more, and then you have corporate profits improving, although in a lot of the reporting, what we have seen is that the lion's share of that improvement is coming in the form of lower overheads. So they become more efficient. Now, if the economic recovery comes through, then they'll be in strong positions and corporate profits will soar. Well, I think that will happen for some. China springs to mind, but we have to be careful because people are already forecasting a 30% rise in, across the boards on average for China's corporate profits in 2010. And that's a breathtaking figure. And companies that don't achieve that may be under a bit of pressure. We will see. But at any rate, the overall environment for stock markets has been bullish. I maintain, we have maintained here at Fuller Money since that selling climax became so obvious in October 2008, and that's when the Chinas and the leading resources markets all reached their lows. India also, although it retested it again in March, China didn't. It just kept going up. So that's the interesting background because the beginning of the end of the bear market, October 2008, is by definition the beginning of the bottoming out process for the next bull market. And markets have been in various stages of base formation development, with the Fuller Money themes then leading on the upside, so completing smaller bases. Well, the OECD stock markets, or certainly the Western ones, have really remained in these overall base formations, which are characterized by lows in October and November, and then rallies from those levels, then moves right back down into new low ground, not in all instances, but for the most part in March, February and March, and then rallies back up towards those October and November previous rally highs for most of those markets. In other words, they've got big ranging sideways ranging patterns, and they're currently near the upper side of those ranging patterns, which are type 3 base formations in the chart seminar classification. Now, markets have been so impressive this week. Does this mean that we're just going to run on the upside in a meaningful way? Well, it's not impossible, as we've said so often, that in a bull market environment, and this is a bull market environment, there isn't anything in the technical action that suggests otherwise. But in a bull market environment, most of the surprises are to the upside. So markets could run. Will they run? Are they likely? Do I think they're going to run? I think probably not. I'm less confident about that because of the upper dynamics than I would have been last Friday, for certain. Because we were still in that reaction, base formation extension phase back then. But why, other than the fact that I've been surprised by the strength of this week's rally, and I'll often be surprised on the upside while still being bullish overall in a bull market environment. Again, most of the surprises are on the upside. So why might we see a pullback and base formation extension activity? Well, there can be a disconnect between the market performance and the fundamental data. Not in China, but at least not yet, but in the US economy, for instance, where it takes a fair amount of creativity to see lots of green shoots in terms of economic activity. That doesn't mean corporate profits aren't going up for the reasons of cost cuts that I've already discussed. And I think the most important factor, and the example I've cited, was following the crash of 1987, investors agonized over the possibility of a repeat for the next several years. So every time September and October rolled around, investors were quaking and wondering if we were going to get another crash. Well, behaviorally, that's understandable. It's an emotional response, more than an intellectual response, but only a fool would say that stock market movements or any traded market movements are more intellectual than emotional. They're not. Emotions rule the manic depressive crowd. So I think there's scope here for, once this rally runs out of steam, and it hasn't yet, or it hasn't today, there's scope for investors to reassess again and start to worry about, are things going to run into trouble in September, October, possibly November? Now, that's a hypothesis. I think it's a behaviorally logical hypothesis. And it wasn't a crash the way we saw in 1987. It was just a 3-month meltdown. But I think that's sufficiently branded into people's memories to cause some anxiety. But if that's going to be the case, two things have to happen. First, we need to see some downward dynamics. And really, all we've seen, starting with Monday, has been upward dynamics in this last week. And that means that we've also seen markets establish some quite important lows, near reaction lows, near Monday's lows for many of these stock markets. A few of them established that the low fractionally lower than the week before. But for all intents and purposes, those lows on July 13th, what is very easy, what it is very easy for me to say, is that we cannot have a deeper reaction or correction and lower phase of base extension unless those stock markets take out the lows that they saw on the 13th of July. So we would see, relative to today's levels, we would see fairly quickly when stock markets got into trouble. And I don't think we would take out those lows unless we saw some quite powerful downward dynamics beforehand. And until that happens, I don't think we need to worry about it overly. Is that risk and possibility sufficient for long-term investors to cut their long positions? Well, not for this long-term investor, and although I do a lot of trading, I do hold long-term investments in stock markets, as you know, which I don't turn over very much. But if I had become anxious and sold out of China or out of India, I'd be worried right now. I maintain that the downside risk for those leading stock markets, Fuller Money Themes, Asian emerging markets, the resources, technology, I maintain the downside risk is limited to mean reversion in terms of the 200-day moving averages, which are moving upwards. Now, if investors take fright, you get a sharp downward reaction. That's the correction towards the mean reversion, creating a great buying opportunity. If investors hold their nerve with the help of excess liquidity around the markets, then you get the reversion in the form of a sideways ranging pattern. At least it allows the market to digest the gains before it resumes the overall advance. So I mentioned that in saying that I'm not in the least bit interested in selling out my long-term investment positions in Fuller Money Themes. But equally, I'm not leveraging up here in this environment, and I've been quite cautious in terms of my PA trading activity. And actually, my PA trading activity is on the wrong side of equity markets at the moment, because I've got a couple of hedge shorts out in the SMI and in this that EEV, which is that leveraged emerging markets vehicle traded in the U.S. or listed in the U.S. rather. So, I'm probably going to hold on to those short positions a little bit longer, because I want to see if investors don't have another throb, another worry about the possibility of an additional shakeout. I'm inclined to do that also because the environment's been really quite choppy overall for a lot of markets. That's been the case, not just currencies. We've seen a lot of choppy ranging overall. Okay, but the big picture in terms of these stock markets is, I would maintain bullish, and that the risk is that we get the additional pullback and base formation development stage. But I really do feel that come year end 2009, that even if we were to pull back, that I think markets would then go into a very bullish mode. And partly because weaker stock markets would weigh on the nerves of monetary policy people, or the people who are in charge of monetary policy and fiscal policy, would certainly tempt some into additional stimulus programs, and they'd be worried about deflation risks, and they certainly wouldn't be talking about raising interest rates. So that background, I think, remains. That background would be quite quite bullish overall. Now, markets may not worry that much. There's a possibility, real possibility, given the action we've seen this week, that, and I think this is about 50-50 as to whether we get wobbles in August, September, October, or whether markets just remain firm, albeit not quite so firm as we've seen this week. I think it's about 50-50 overall. But I do feel that we will be moving into 2010 higher than we are right now, and that's probably going to be quite a good year in stock markets. If there's a canary in the coal mine, and there is always a canary in the coal mine, to signal trouble, watch the long-dated government bond yields. Because if they run up sharply, that will, well, effectively, that canary will be going silent, and we'll have to be careful. That would be become a risk because the bonds would become more competitive. People would be worrying more about inflation, and well, it would be a threat. There's another one. There's another canary in the coal mine. That would be the crude oil price. Crude oil, which I hadn't mentioned earlier, but it had a decent day today, up 158. It's currently at 63.60. Now, that's $10 off its high that we saw earlier in the month. But if we get back up to that high, let alone extend it, and then that will be creating a headwind for global stock markets. So, watch those factors. Commodity prices, particularly if crude is moving, could revive inflation concerns. And on the other hand, as would rising long-dated government bond yields, they'd probably go together. This would be a little bit of a double whammy there. They would confirm each other. But that's not a serious risk at this time, and it's unlikely to be a serious risk if we get stock markets extending their ranging patterns or experiencing a bit more of a pullback overall. Okay, what about these currencies now? When you get a ranging market, and that's very much what we have for the US dollar, one of the points that for years and years and years that I've taught and that Owen now teaches at these at the chart seminar, and people are saying, well, which way is it going to break out from that trading range? Well, one of my fallbacks has always been, what's the last significant thing that that market did? Well, the last significant thing that the US dollar did was give up some of those strong gains that had occurred in the depths of the financial panic. And there is no evidence that that trend downwards of retracing dollar retracement of gains is over. It's just paused within a range, and currently the dollar is in the middle to lower side of its ranges against various different currencies for the most part. So that to me overall is a bearish story. Again, if stock markets pull back, the knee-jerk response that we have been seeing and therefore may still see for a while longer would be for the dollar and the yen to firm. Conversely, if stock markets hold firm or move higher, then that same knee-jerk response would be for the dollar and the yen to weaken. But at some point, those are going to uncouple, and I think they'll uncouple before the end of the year, and that the break in the dollar is likely to be to the downside. And that's the way I'm lightly positioned. And I think that's about it here for this review. on Friday, the 17th of July. And so it's time for me to wish you an absolutely splendid weekend. There's lots of phenomenal sport on, or at least in the UK, if you're interested in that thing, with the Golf Open and the cricket Ashes Test Series. That's always an exciting, really exciting event for us over here. And gosh, well, there are all sorts of other things, but I won't waste any more of your time on that. I'll just say enjoy.